Let's talk to BJ Raines from the Idaho Press Tribune about this. BJ, what say you?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? You guys would be heroes in this town with that kind of talk, because Boise State fans aren't feeling that compliment at all.
Really? Tell us why.
I just think that the second half in particular, the offense for Boise State really did nothing. They had seven possessions, they had six punts, and they lost a fumble until the kneel down on the final possession. The offense did not score in the second half. Had really two really nice touchdown drives in the first half, but just other than that, didn't do a lot offensively. The quarterback, Ryan Finley, making his first start, only passed for 129 yards, I think. And, you know, they gave a punt return for a touchdown. Overall, I think there was some plays where if they catch a deep pass and if they don't fumble, you know, it could have been 30-0 pretty easily. And I think Boise State fans just, you know, the spread was a double-digit point spread. They expected to just kind of roll over Washington and Coach P, and they kind of wanted to have, you know, like a beatdown on the blue. And it just didn't happen. And the way that Washington came back and almost won the game at the end, I think that Boise State fans are just a little disappointed. I guess they wanted to see a little bit more from the offense. The play calling, they weren't a huge fan of. So, you know, when you're expected to win every game this year like Boise State is, I think that the fans are, I don't know if spoiled is the right word, but they, you know, they're used to winning games by big margins and stuff. So I think they're a little concerned with how that first game went. But, you know, the coaches said, hey, we're 1-0. That's the most important thing. We're going to make some corrections. And I think the realistic, rational Boise State fans were just happy to get out of there with a win, and they realized that the challenge while on the road. But I think there are a lot of fans that I'm reading on message boards and talk radio and things like that that are just a little concerned with the offense and having to go into a hostile environment, a big crowd down there, and I think they realize it's going to be a pretty tough game.
So where do the coaches feel like they need to make the biggest improvement from week one to week two? I mean, you touched on a lot of different things, you know, quarterback play, things like that. Where do the coaches feel that they have to make that improvement heading into Provo?
Well, I mean, the second half, they didn't really run the ball very well. First down was a big issue for them. You know, they weren't getting much on first down, so all of a sudden they're in second and nine and third and eight, and, you know, they're kind of behind the chains. And so they want to be better on first down. That's a big key for them. And especially in the second half, they just didn't run the ball at all on first down. And so then they were, you know, just tough and just kind of were conceding the drive and just punting. And so, you know, offensively they want to move the ball better. They want to get some more of the receivers involved. I mean, there were like 16 completions for the quarterback, but I think over half of them were to, you know, to running backs or tight ends. I mean, they didn't really get some of their true receivers involved very much. I think only three catches for their number one receiver, Thomas Spurbeck. Shane Williams-Rhodes wasn't that involved. So I think they want to just try to, you know, get the tempo a little better on offense, get some more drives going, and just put it together for four quarters. I mean, they were close to busting a couple of big plays. Like I said, they had a deep pass over the middle that would have been a touchdown, but it just tipped off the fingers of Chaz Anderson. I mean, if he catches that, that's seven. There was another play where they had a miscommunication. The receiver turned the wrong way, and he was wide open, and that would have been a big gain. And then they had the fumble and the interception both down near the red zone. And so I think they feel like they just have some small mistakes to clean up. The coaching staff seems a lot more confident than the fan base, and I think a lot of the fans are kind of wondering, you know, what are the coaches talking about? It's not as close as it seemed, and I tend to take the side of the coaches on this. They just feel like there are some small things, some small timing issues they have to clean up, and they feel like the offense is going to be a lot better this week. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe Washington's defense is a little better than folks are giving them credit for. I mean, again, that's a Pac-12 team. And I know they're supposed to be down this year, but they're still a Pac-12 team. They have Pac-12 caliber athletes on their team. And maybe Washington's defense is just a little better than some folks think. I guess we'll find out later in the season. But I would say overall, they just want to improve the timing on offense, the rhythm, just try to get some more sustained drives going. And they feel like they were very close to doing that. And then obviously special teams, they had an extra point block. They had a punt block, and they gave a punt return for a touchdown. So the punt unit in particular and special teams as a whole has to be a lot better this week.
BJ Raines, Idaho Press Tribune, here on Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. BJ, I was watching the film of this game. I mean, you've mentioned special teams. I was also looking at it's hard to tell what's going on in the secondary. I think the secondary has a lot of athletes there at Boise. Obviously, there's going to be a height advantage for the wide receivers at BYU. But The other weakness was Finley, and it was blatantly obvious that Finley is still not a good quarterback. I'd say he's an average to maybe even sometimes decent quarterback. I will say this, he's a decent athlete. He can extend plays. Is that how Boise State fans are feeling right now, that Finley's just kind of a kind of an average to maybe at times decent quarterback?
Yeah, it's interesting because they have a true freshman, Brett Rippon, who set all kinds of records in the state of Washington. He broke Kellen Moore's career passing records and single season yards records in the state of Washington. And he was the, you know, one of the highest rated recruits ever to sign with Boise State. And he graduated high school early so he could come in the spring and participate in spring practice and compete for the job. And I think there were a lot of Boise State fans that wanted him to win the job, wanted him to be a 4-year starter. You know, a lot of fans that hadn't even seen him play, just heard about him and said, he's the guy we want. And so they had this quarterback competition. According to the coaches, at least, you know, during spring and summer, Finley was clearly ahead. Sounds like Brett Rippon made some progress during the fall, but just wasn't quite ready. He's going to be a very, very good player for him. Wouldn't surprise me at all if he's a starting quarterback as a redshirt freshman next season. But just don't know if they felt, you know, quite ready. And obviously they didn't because they didn't play him. You know, they went with Finley. I think they're very confident in Finley. You know, he's shown, you know, flashes of being a very good quarterback, but again, the only game film they had of him was a, you know, fourth quarter against Air Force when the score was 28-0. So they wanted to get him out in the game and see what they, you know, see what he did. And I would agree with that. I mean, there was a big fourth down that he picked up with his leg. It was 4th and 2, and he rushed for 4 yards. Mm-hmm. There were a couple other plays where he used his legs to extend the plays. So he does have the ability to do that. He's not quite the runner that Grant Hedrick was last year, but. Yeah, I mean, is he going to be a Heisman Trophy winner? Probably not, but I do think he's a better quarterback. I think the coaches feel he's a better quarterback than maybe he showed at times. Again, that was his first career start, so, you know, it probably had some jitters, who knows, but it was, you know, he didn't really play much last year. Had one extended game against Air Force, like I said, kind of did some kneel downs or some handoffs in some other games, so that was the first time that he played a full game, and I think that he learned a lot from that. You know, he said he knows some areas he can improve in. I think that, like I said, the coaches are expecting him to be a lot better next week or Saturday. But if he's not, if he has another game where he struggles, and even if Boise State loses, you'll be hearing fans, you know, like crazy calling for Rippon to come in. And I don't know if there's any chance of that actually happening. But even in the second half, there were fans saying, time to give Rippon a chance. So, you know, Finley's already up against it because a lot of fans wanted them to go with the true freshman. And so it'll be interesting to see how he plays Saturday and what kind of outside noise there is for a change moving forward.
Speaking of freshmen, obviously BYU will be starting freshman Tanner Mangum at quarterback. What have the Boise State coaching staff, what have they had to say about Tanner, and do they kind of feel like they dodged a major bullet with Taysom not being able to play?
Well, I mean, Brian Harsin recruited him when he was the offensive coordinator at Boise State and then when he went to Texas. So Brian Harsin knows him. He came to some camps on the blue, you know, growing up. The coaching staff is familiar with him. Even Marcel Yates, the defensive coordinator, said that he remembered them because they were recruiting some other players on his high school team. So they're familiar with them. You know, they obviously only have 4 series of game film, but they were impressed with what they saw. Obviously, his ability to throw the ball. You know, this will be the second game in a row where a quarterback's making his first career college start against Boise State. So they didn't have any film of Jake Browning, the true freshman that started for Washington in the last game, and now they're kind of in the same boat. They at least have a, you know, 4 series. They have some plays, but, you know, they don't really know what to expect. They don't know how the offense is going to change with him. They, you know, and if they do, they're obviously not telling us. But they're having to play the guessing game a little bit to see how the offense is going to change with him. You know, they did talk about the fact that a lot of the rushing game from Washington or from BYU came from Taysom Hill, and you know they expect him to try to run the ball more with some other guys and establish more of a run, which they didn't have a whole lot of success with other than Hill in the first game. So. You know, they're trying to game plan the best they can, but ideally it's not a perfect situation for them. They're never going to come out publicly and say, yeah, we dodged a bullet. We don't have to play Taysom Hill. But, you know, Tanner Mangum may turn into a fine quarterback, but I don't know if he's a Heisman Trophy candidate this year, which you could say that Taysom Hill probably was. So I think they're realistic about it. I mean, you know, maybe privately they're a little bit, you know, a little bit breathing easier, but I don't think by any means they're taking Tanner Mangum lightly. They're saying all the right things about him. They know that he's a very capable quarterback, and obviously with what he did to bring him back to win that game, is a guy that's had some success and is feeling pretty good confidence-wise. So I think they're not taking anything for granted. They know it's going to be a tough challenge for them. They know it's going to be a really hostile environment for them going down there with the whiteout. You know, they're playing on grass. That's an issue. Last year they played on grass at UConn, and they were slipping all over the place with their cleats and stuff. So they're hoping to have a better experience on grass this year. This is the only team they'll play that has grass. So there's a lot of factors going against them, and I think they're just going to go down there and they're calling them a business trip. And obviously it starts with finding a way to slow that offense down, because 2 years ago when they went down there, they couldn't stop them at all and just got thrashed.
Tell me what you saw versus Washington in the run game. Was the early success that they had in that first half a product of the offensive line, or was it these three very dynamic, very shifty, and even powerful at times for how small they are, the product and on the field that you saw? Was that the production? Did that just come from the ability of these running backs or the ability of the offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't rush great in the second half, but they still finished with 185 yards rushing for the game. So if you can rush for close to 200 yards for the game, that's not bad. And, you know, last year everybody knows they had Jay Ajayi, and he pretty much did it himself. He led the nation in total touches, carries, and receptions, and was just a workhorse for him and couldn't come off the field. And so this year he's gone, obviously, in the NFL. They've got three capable backs that they feel really good about. Jeremy McNichols is the starter. He's a sophomore. He burned his red shirt midway through last season. He had 24 carries in the game, I think close to 90 yards. Kelsey Young is a graduate transfer from Stanford. They didn't really know what they were going to get out of him, and he rushed for almost 50 yards in the first game, I think on, I want to say, you know, about 10 carries. He did lose a fumble, though, which wasn't great. But, both those guys are kind of powerful guys between the tackles. And then they have this speed guy, Devin Demas. He's a lot smaller, shiftier guy. He's the fastest player on the team, runs a 4.37 40. He's a guy that had four carries for 20 yards, but they want to use him more in this game. When he gets out on the edge, he's a guy in space that's really hard to bring down and hard to catch. So they feel like the three guys combined, McNichols, Demas, and Young, together, you know, kind of give them an element of what maybe Jay Ajayi did by himself last year. And they're hoping that these three guys can stay fresh and, provide something. And, you know, you mentioned the offensive line, all five starters back from the offensive line last year. And so they have a veteran offensive line. They feel very confident about that group. And so, you know, you're bringing back all five starters on the O-line. They're confident in that group. And obviously with these three backs and the way they played the other night, I think, especially as you say, with the quarterback Finley, they're going to rely on the running game a lot again, probably on Saturday. And they're going to need to run the ball well, especially on early downs, to keep those chains moving.
Every time these two teams play each other, especially in the last couple of years, the question on whether or not this is a rivalry is brought up. I'm not quite sure why it's such a big deal that it has to be a rivalry. I think that it probably is and will get stronger as this series continues. But what's your take on it, the rivalry between these two? Is it a rivalry? Where does it stand? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's funny because you're right. That was a question that's been brought up plenty in the last couple of days. A lot of the Boise State coaches and players are being asked, is this a rivalry? And it's funny to hear, that angle from the other side. But, certainly it's because the deal is so long, what was it, a 12-year deal? That's certainly something that they're going to be playing every year. They're going to be, seeing each other almost like a conference opponent, even though they're not. So there's obviously a big, following of BYU in the Boise area. I think that plays into it as well. So whether it's a rivalry or not, I think that, one of the defensive players ended up getting there because the games have been, they've been pretty good games. Obviously, the fact that both teams have won in recent years, usually it has to be a rivalry. If one team's just winning every game, that's not really a rivalry. But the fact that Boise State went down there 2 years ago and got beat pretty handedly, and the fact that both schools have good teams and good fan bases, I think it's getting there. I mean, is it like an Idaho Boise State or a Boise State Fresno State or Boise State Nevada? Probably not. But I do think with the fact that they're on the schedule, they know they're going to be playing every year, and the fact that there is a strong fan base, of both teams here in Boise, I do think it's slowly but surely every year it seems to be getting a little bit better.
EJ Raines on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Did you watch the entire BYU-Nebraska game?
I watched a good portion of it, yes. And I went back and watched particularly the fourth quarter again.
What did you think about Tanner Mangum? What did you think about the BYU offense, and how will they match up with Boise State's defense?
Well, I mean, obviously you guys would know better than me, but it's noticeable the size of the wide receivers. three starting wide receivers all over 6'5", I think. I mean, it's noticeable when you watch it on film, and it's noticeable when you think about the fact that Boise State's starting corners are 5'9 and 5'10. And so, you know, that's probably something that you got, you know, as I said, you guys would know, but I would think that's probably a big advantage for BYU every game, and they try to take advantage of it. But it does seem like in this game, when you have guys 5'9 the guy, and 5'10, that's something that they're going to try to exploit. And talking to a couple of the Boise State defensive backs today, they said they like the challenge. They always get called small and stuff. And, you know, that's going to be a storyline out there, their size, you know, giving up 7-8 inches to some of those guys. But, you know, they said it comes down to technique and, you know, reading your keys and things like that. And they're confident they can do a good job. So I think that was noticeable. I thought Mangum played pretty well. I mean, so you look at the stats, 7-for-11, I think 111 yards. Certainly he's not Taysom Hill, but the fact that he'll have all week to prepare as a starter, the fact they'll be able to kind of make the game plan more about him and his skill set. I thought it was interesting listening to the offensive coordinator, I guess it was today, saying that the BYU offensive coordinator, that, you know, they don't really know what Tanner Mangum's skill set is yet. They're still trying to figure that out and make the game plan around him. And it's interesting because obviously Boise State's in the same boat. They're trying to figure out his skill set and what he can do and what BYU is going to try to do with him. So I think, you know, the one strength, or not the one strength, but the biggest strength on Boise State is their defense. I mean, Boise State would have had a shutout against Washington if not for a punt return and then two bad punts because of field position. I mean, the defense only gave up 179 total yards. They limited Washington to 94 total yards going into the fourth quarter. Washington, who has a running back ironically named Washington, I think only rushed for 29 yards in the whole game. So the Boise State defense is very veteran. They have 8-9 starters returning, depending on how you classify it. They have four players on the preseason All-Mountain West team. I mean, the defense is very good for Boise State. And so they're going to keep them in a lot of games. And on the road in a hostile environment like this, you know, with an offense that's still trying to get going at the quarterback position, I'm going to be, you know, very interested to see again if this defense can kind of put them on their back and play well in this game.
All right, now I have to ask you a non-football question because of what you used to do in a previous life, and that's covering the St. Louis Cardinals. Now I am from Missouri. I am a Cardinals fan. I was actually in St. Louis last week. Unfortunately, I picked one of the games. They got trounced by the Pirates. You keep in contact with your people back in St. Louis? Do you follow the Cardinals and what they're doing?
Oh, I watch almost every game still. Yep, I grew up born and raised in St. Louis, and I've got the MLB.TV package, so I watch pretty much every game when I can, either live or TiVo, and it helps me get through the days, especially in the summertime when there's not much going on with Boise State football and stuff. So I don't miss a game, yes.
I'm the same way. I have the MLB package, and I watched, luckily watched it today.
Ridiculous.
No, but what I was going to ask you is, talk to me about the difference in covering that, you know, a Major League Baseball team, and now covering a team like Boise State and college football and stuff like that. What was that transition like for you?
Oh, it's a lot different. I mean, I was a young guy working for FoxSportsMidwest.com, and, you know, got a nice gig out of college, and it was a new position and weren't paying much, and I was the perfect guy for it. And so, you know, it was great. I got to cover the 2011 World Series, covered the David Freese game in Game 6, and got awesome. To cover Game 7, and you know, just to have that experience covering a World Series was you know, All-Star game when they had the All-Star game in St. Louis and Kansas City also. Experiences I'll never forget. But, you know, I was looking to branch out, and my wife was graduating nursing school, so we could go anywhere. And I liked the outdoors and stuff. And, you know, just always liked my time covering college athletics too. And I, you know, heard so much about the blue turf and Boise State, and figured give it a shot, you know, for a while and head out there and see it. And I love it out here. And it is certainly different, though. I mean, you walk into a major league clubhouse, if you see Albert Pujols or Lance Berkman or Matt Holliday, you know, over there by the lockers, you can just walk up and introduce yourself and start interviewing them. And if you're in college, you know, you've got to go through the SID and set things up ahead of time. And if there's a, you know, a story about a guy, you can't, you know, if it's major leagues and a guy gets arrested or something, you know, you just call him up on his cell phone. Or if a guy breaks his leg or something, you call him up. You know, it's so much more structured, as you guys know, in college, having to go through the proper channels and not interviewing anybody without it being approved by the head coach and all this. So there's a lot of differences. I love both sports. Baseball is probably still my favorite sport, but it's from a media perspective, and only having to travel once every other week for a football game, as opposed to, you know, a 10-game road trip for baseball. It's much more relaxing, and I'm enjoying both, but I do miss it come playoff time. Once the playoffs roll around, there's nothing like playoff baseball, and I do, you know, when I'm stuck in the press box at, you know, Nevada or someplace, or trying to watch the playoff game on my iPad, I'm certainly missing that I was back. But I'm loving what I'm doing, and hopefully the Cardinals can get it rolling here in September.
Well, I completely agree on that. You touched on something in terms of the fan base at Boise State. How would you describe the fan base? Because when you're talking about Boise, I mean, there is, when you're talking about sports, there's one game in town, and that's Boise State Athletics. What's the fan base like in terms of expectations and just how closely associated they are with this team?
Oh, I mean, they're diehard. I mean, they're probably like Cardinal fans in that way. I mean, they love their team, but you have the certain percentage of them that, you know, just overreact with every play. And you have the guys that are, you know, blogging from their, you know, their parents' basement or wherever. Every fan base has, you know, that portion of it. And certainly Boise State has that portion of it that they just, with every play and everything, they think they know what's going on. And I love Boise State fans. I mean, they're very passionate about their team. The fan base, I'm just surprised at how widespread it is. I mean, I get emails from fans all over the country that are Boise State fans just because they wanted to pick a team, and whether it was the blue turf or whatever. I mean, they're very passionate. They travel pretty well on the road usually. They get big crowds for the bowl games and the big games. I'm sure they'll have a decent fan base on Saturday. But there are some that are, you know, quick to want to, you know, say the sky is falling and the season's over and all that stuff. So the coaches, you know, have to tune that stuff out because there's, you know, last year when they lost to Air Force and they're 3-2, and I mean, everybody just thought that the program was on the way down, and Coach Pete got out at the right time, and they're people saying, oh, it'll probably be FCS in a couple of years. I mean, it's just people overreact way too much, but certainly that's what you love about college sports, and they're a very passionate fan base. And I think for the majority of them are rational, and they understand it, and they kind of take a deep breath. But if you go to a message board, you know, 10 minutes after at halftime or 10 minutes after a game they lose or something, you can get the popcorn out because it can be entertaining.
Why do they keep running it up the middle? Why do they pass on those situations? Stop passing there.
It's pretty much basically exactly like that, and it's obvious stuff that you think coaches probably have a better idea than they do of what they're talking about, but apparently not.
Run a trick play for once. You're so predictable. Anyways. Love it, BJ. Thanks for hopping on with us. Appreciate you giving us some insight. And I can't wait to enjoy the game. Are you heading down to the game?
Oh, I am heading down to the game. I'm coming down Friday, and I'll be heading to an in and out as soon as possible.
There you go, brother. We'll try to get a hike in or something like that. You don't have the mountains in Boise like you do here. There's some tremendous hikes up American Fork Canyon. Try it out.
Yeah, we sold the one right behind the stadium, right? Is that a good one?
Yeah, you can hike the Y.
Yeah, you can hike right up to the Y. It's very manageable. It's a manageable hike.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know how good a shape you're. I don't know what you're trying to look for. How many switchbacks are there on that? I mean, it's not a scenic hike until you get to the top and kind of look out. You know, you're not going through like wilderness. It's like a side of a mountain that you're switchbacking, going back and forth, and then you get to the top of the Y and you can see the Utah Valley, the great Utah Valley. So,
I'll have to do some research and find one because, that game not be until 8 o'clock. I'll have some time on Saturday morning to get out and do something.
Get out there, get some exercise done, man. Appreciate it. BJ, thanks for hopping
on with us. No problem, guys. Yeah, hopefully I'll see you at the game. Take care.